When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor, and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store.
Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Today is going to be Bees in the News, Episode 4. This is part 2 of our theme that we had from the recent trip cross-country, picking an article from each of the states that we traversed. So on the list today, we have Kansas, Colorado, Wyoming, and Utah. And then we have just one bonus article to get us to our number 5 so that we can still deliver 5 per episode here. So starting off in Kansas. This is talking about the Iowa tribe. So to save their soil, Kansas tribe shifts to regenerative agriculture and transforms their farms. When one of the elders in the Iowa tribe of Kansas and Nebraska asked if he could keep bees on the reservation, Tim Rod's answer was straightforward. Absolutely. Soon the bees started buzzing in the alfalfa fields. Then they started pollinating. Then they all died. Once we started looking into it, we found there was a chemical class called neonicotinoids that caused the death of these bees, said Rod, the tribe's chairperson. That was the very, very first part of what I had seen that we were doing things wrong. Facing the reality that their soil was contaminated and the realization that the same harmful insecticides that killed the bees would be bad for them too, the Iowa started questioning their farming practices. After receiving a grant in 2019, the tribe switched its farming operations from monocropping, growing one plant in the same soil year after year, to regenerative agriculture, a process designed to promote biodiversity and soil health by minimizing disturbances and maintaining living roots as much as possible. By caring for a rotation of diverse crops throughout the year, rather than controlling the soil year-round for just one seasonal crop, farmers eliminate the need for herbicides and pesticides. So the article continues on discussing the evolution from monocropping to regenerative farming, some of the history of the farm, the various things they produce, and where they are today. A bit further down, the article continues, the farm generates vital revenue for the tribe. The tribe found historical evidence that diverse irrigation processes mimicking a more natural system have been in place on the land within the past 200 years. Holism is about everything being parts of the whole, said Lance Foster, a tribal historic preservation officer and former vice chair of the tribe. You cannot have health without the land. You cannot have good food without the land. The Iowa don't have a word for wilderness because to us it wasn't wild. It was our home. The tribe also started practicing adaptive multi-paddock grazing, a system of managing livestock to mimic the constantly moving herds that once roamed the prairies, so that their grazing patterns encourage more biodiversity in the soil. Once we have our healthy soils, we'll be able to have healthy plants, Healthy animals, healthy humans, Rod said. That includes the bees. So it was an interesting article. I found it to be pretty fascinating and just kind of talking through some of the things that they do out there and the process. I think that when we think about things as beekeepers, sometimes we tend to get, you know, laser focused on just the bees. Or if you're in agriculture, you get really, really focused in on the soil and what you have to do to prevent pests and to provide the maximum amount of nutrients. And it's balancing act that keeps going on, and it's a cycle. But the more and more I think that we get back to the things of old, the things that are less technologically driven and more just naturally driven, I feel like long term that's probably going to be better for everybody involved. But it was a good story. I enjoyed the article. Next, we're going to move into Colorado. Meet Dr. Sammy, the Colorado researcher trying to fend off the next honeybee pandemic. As a new virulent mite inches closer to North America, entomologist Sammy Ramsey's work involves serious science and singing R&B to persuade the Thai beekeepers to share their secrets. Sammy Ramsey has spent years carefully tracking a genus of tiny mites as they spread across Asia. This winter, the honeybee parasite expert and endowed professor of entomology at the University of Colorado received a series of concerning reports. Tropolelaps mites appear to have arrived in Ukraine. Their presence in Ukraine is the biggest wake-up call to the rest of the world about this parasite, he said. Ukraine exports bees to Canada, so North America might not be too far behind. American beekeepers are already familiar with Tropolelaps' relative Varroa destructor mite. But Tropolelaps are both deadlier and harder to kill. Now check this one out right here. Here's a statistic that's going to blow your mind. When the mites reached India, entomologists estimated that they killed between 50 and 100% of the colonies they infested. A similar death toll in the U.S. would have a devastating impact on not only beekeeping, but agriculture as well. Nearly a third of the food that we eat comes from crops that rely on honeybees. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, pollinators contribute more than $18 billion to the U.S. economy annually, with honeybees leading the way. Now, I think that, you know, honeybees, the European honeybee, did not actually exist in North America or in the United States, and they were imported here. And in many ways, a case can be made that there are a lot of local native pollinators that can do a very good job. But I think the problem comes into the amount of concentration that we have in food resources. So we take an area that naturally could produce whatever unit of measure you want to make. You know, let's say a unit measure of 100, it could create 100 of whatever. And there are enough native pollinators in the area to pollinate that unit measure, you know, of 100. Then that's perfectly fine. But think about what we do. We hyper concentrate, you know, all of our almond trees in one area, or all of a certain type of fruit or vegetable. They get really, really concentrated into areas where the only way we can really be successful and to have them be pollinated and to produce the maximum amount of whatever it is that they are, you need additional help. So again, that's one of the many challenges we face. The article continues, over the past two decades, U.S. honeybees have faced numerous environmental challenges. Invasive pests, disease, and habitat destruction have strained colonies across the country. The state of honeybees right now is precarious because they're already dealing with a ridiculous amount of stress, Ramsey said, but we're making it work. Thus far, U.S. beekeepers have been able to deal with lost colonies by splitting their surviving hives to create new ones. Yet this approach only works if a certain portion of colonies remain healthy. The question now is if the honeybees can survive an even more destructive pest. So the article talks about how, you know, brood is weakened, much like it is with Varroa. It goes on to talk about what happens when those infected brood emerge. It further goes on to talk about how the infected brood that do survive, what happens when they emerge. The bees that do survive to emerge are left with a greatly weakened immune system, and the wounds left by the mite's mandibles can lead to crippling physical deformities. They rarely survive more than a few days. To make matters worse, Tropolelaps mites often transmit virulent diseases. Black queen cell virus infects and kills queen bee larvae, while deformed wing virus disrupts pupa development, leaving bees disabled, partially paralyzed, and flightless. You'll see adult bees with these deformed wings crawling on the outside of the hive, Cook said. Continuing on, it further discusses how Ramsey is working in Thailand with beekeepers there to get ahead of things. And I guess that's where the R&B part came in from the introduction. So interesting article. Like I said, this one's pretty scary if this actually gets legs and ends up coming to the U.S. I really don't know what the solution or the answer is going to be, but it is definitely scary. Okay, moving over to Wyoming. Quick Wyoming fun fact here. The guy who caught the swarm at the Dodgers game the other day from our first In the News segment was from Wyoming. So I was looking around trying to find something, and apparently, like, that's their new claim to fame. It's like, Wyoming, you know, the guy who caught the bees at the baseball game. He's from here. So I had a fun article that I found on Wyoming, but they failed to mention the number one killer of bees being Varroa, yet they tried to really put a lot of emphasis around my single number one trigger phrase in their article. I can't have that, and for that reason, they are out. I did find something else that was interesting, though, and I'm sure that there are other municipalities around the country and possibly around the world that do this, but this is the first time that I've seen it. On the Casper, Wyoming government site, they have a place for you to register your beehives so that when they're fogging with pesticides, they can kind of be aware of where you are and do the best to try to avoid your colonies. Now, to be perfectly honest with you, like, this spraying like that just scares the crap out of me. I don't like the idea of that happening anywhere near my bees. Now, their position is that, well, it's going on in the evening. Most of the bees are back at their hive by then, so it's okay. I guess if the air outside stays in one place and doesn't move around anywhere and all the toxicity of those chemicals go away in 10 or 15 minutes, maybe it's not going to have an impact. But in the absence of that, I feel like it's going to have an effect on the bees. But, you know, what do you do, right? You know, you got the mosquitoes. They're carrying other kinds of illness and disease. People want to kill the mosquitoes. Nobody wants mosquitoes. And now they're going to kill the bees. And I don't know. What do you do? But I brought it up because at least they're trying to make some kind of an effort to consider the fact that, hey, maybe people have honeybees and maybe we can try to help protect that investment. So next on my list is Utah. And this is from a site called Pass It On. And it's Benny's Bees, How a Former Marine with PTSD Finds Solace in Service and Beekeeping by the Foundation for a Better Life. Benny's up early. His fit frame and efficient movements are a testament to his military training. He hoists heavy boxes of packaged honey into the back of his truck before the sun is up. But he always has time for a chat, and that begins with him handing you a bottle of honey and talking about its health benefits. Honey is one of the healthiest foods on the planet, stocked with nutrients, antioxidants, and unlike other sweeteners, it may even help maintain blood sugar levels. Honey also reduces inflammation and improves heart health. It helps suppress coughing in children and even helps heal open wounds, especially from burns, as a topical ointment. So the article kind of continues talking about some of the benefits of honey and all of that. But the reason that I wanted to bring this article up is because while I was out in Utah, I was near, I'm pretty sure it was near the Little Cottonwood Canyon. It was either the Little Cottonwood or the Big Cottonwood Canyon. Not sure which one, but I was out in that area with my uncle. And I saw a sign on the side of the road that said, honey, dropped in there, had a chance to meet Benny. Within about 10 or 15 seconds, I was like, we got to get this guy on the podcast. He was just a super, super cool fella. Really enjoyed talking to him. Squared away, dude. So we're actually interviewing him tomorrow. Probably by the time you've listened to this episode, I probably either have, am about to, or just did finish up the interview. And we're going to have him on like around the 10th or so of June. We'll have that on the regular episode that Friday. So super great guy, and was happy to have him here for our Utah article. Okay, last but not least, this is just a general article. It came from us from The Bee Listener out of the UK. Thermoregulation and a Chilling Tale. So the introduction. I wrote this for Beecraft's Cyclopedia series, but they already had an article lined up for E. So this was adapted and used as a standalone piece for publication in a recent copy of their magazine. Thermoregulation. E is for endothermy, which is one strategy that honeybees have evolved to employ in keeping themselves warm and maintaining homeostasis. This brings us immediately to a question I often ask. Are honeybees warm or cold-blooded? It's a complicated situation and not a surprise that some people incorrectly refer to honeybees as being cold-blooded animals. Firstly, it is probably best to dispense with the terms hot and cold-blooded, as they're not really helpful to our understanding of the concept of homeostasis and thermoregulation, temperature control, in an organism. Let's delve deeper to unravel the truth. So it goes on and continues to talk about how people generate heat. It goes through amphibians, reptiles, fish, talks about other animals. It also goes into a discussion around energy and how it's used and the heat generated during foraging. It's definitely worth reading the whole thing. But towards the end of the article, there were two points I wanted to mention specifically. One of them, it talks about foraging trips. On foraging trips, the energy cost of the worker must be balanced with the gain, and it's harder for the individual bee to maintain its temperature on cloudy days. On sunny days, solar energy, ectothermy, can be harnessed by a worker to reduce its own endothermic effort. It can use the sun to raise its thoracic temperature by nearly 3 degrees Celsius. I thought that was pretty interesting. The next thing it comments on, or I guess the next section that it references, is drowning. Honeybees don't often drown in water. Their waxy exoskeleton acts like a life vest, and they're usually found bobbing about on the water. If you were to add detergent to the water, they would certainly drown as it dissolves the exoskeleton and water floods the respiratory system. Now, this person also went on to talk about an observation hive they had, kind of a mistake they made, how they worked through that mistake, and the end result of their nucleus colony. So I'm not going to go into all of that and read it line by line, but I just thought it was a kind of a neat article talking about cold-blooded versus warm-blooded, generating heat and all of that. So it might be a good thing to check out. All right, everyone. Well, again, thank you for taking the time to listen. You know, all these articles are going to be posted on the Beekeeping for Newbies website. They're going to be in the news section. If you have something that's noteworthy or an announcement that you'd like to make about a bee event or an activity in your area, please let me know. We'll try to get the word out. We have a recording scheduled tomorrow morning. We got another one next Tuesday. We're working on more outside of that to get on the calendar. I've got one that's really, really important on my mind that I want to get out sooner than later. I'm just trying to get one person to answer the phone and talk to me. So I'm hoping that she'll get back with me here in the next couple of days, because it's critically important that we get that information out to you very, very soon. And don't forget to check out this Friday's episode with our special guest from Kansas City, Missouri. That's going to be released at midnight tomorrow night. So today is the 29th. It'll be midnight on the 30th going into the 31st. This is May, right? Okay, yeah, 31st. And feel free to check us out on YouTube. The really good stuff hasn't started on YouTube. I'm going to be very honest with you. The really great stuff hasn't kicked in yet, but I'm working on a few things. We got a couple shorts up and a couple little educational things, but I'm really trying to get that really, really tightened up, put a little more better quality production on it. And I promise you, we're not too far away from that. All right, everybody, take care. Stay out of trouble. Be kind to one another. Good night, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.
In this election, we each face a question. What kind of country do we want to live in? We choose freedom. The freedom not just to get by, but get ahead. The freedom to make decisions about your own body. We believe in the promise of America, and we're ready to fight for it. Because when we fight, we win.
I'ma keep on running, cause a winner don't quit on themselves.
Paid for by Harris for President.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.